Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to NXT, not 8 years back, this year currently. NXT this year currently, that's what the show's called. I'm Kelly Wells, I'm your host, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk, you know, on X, and you can find me at SpookyMilk.games on Instagram. We're going to talk NXT for July the 25th, 2023. Judgment Day still running roughshod over NXT, and a whole lot of hype for Carmelo Hayes versus Ilya Dragunov. And I thought that stuff using Trick in there was just, oh, I thought it was all very strong heading to a Great American Bash that sure does have a lot of matches. Your main event here, your main event segment. So we'll start there. And throughout the night was the sub-story between Trick and Trick Williams and Ilya Dragunov. Your opening match was Carmelo and Trick and Ilya versus Schism. Carmelo ended up pinning Joe Gacy in 11:27, but that was not the story. Lots of moving parts here. The Schism was attacked. The Dyad specifically was attacked by two masked members of the Schism, who probably are the Creed brothers. And so that's going on. Not sure why the baby faces are doing underhanded stuff like that, but I'm also not sure why baby faces are winning by using numbers against the heel like they did in the kendo stick match. But we will get there a little later. So your main event or your opening match was that. Within that, the faces broke down. Torpedo Moscow accidentally hit on Trick. At the end of the night, Torpedo Moscow accidentally hit on Carmelo Hayes. That move just, it always hits somebody else, apparently. He'll always hit it, but he just might not hit the intended target. So throughout the night also, they had scenes where we had the two combatants from Great American Bash just kind of breaking down slowly. And I thought it was a really, really effective one-night storyline. So I guess the first match we're starting with is the opener because that's part of this. But on the storytelling and the hard sell for the main event of Great American Bash, Nate.
Yes. So at Nate Lindberg on X, I don't like that, on Twitter, Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses. I've got one up for tonight. I have one up, or I will have one up for Great American Bash on Sunday. I was also just on Wrestling Night in America with Kevin Catani. We were filling in for Greg Park, so check that out. Come for the wrestling. Stay for the part of the recording I forgot to edit out that talks about my dating life at the end. So I'm just throwing it out there because people keep telling me it's there. So I'm like, guys, I know it's there. I know. I just forgot to edit it. My bad. But we're not here to talk about that. So Ilya and Trick and Mello, I love this. So, you know, I was talking about this last week where it didn't seem like the build for Mello, actually, it was either last week before, but it didn't really seem like the build for Mello and Dragunov was like super, super hot. You know, Dragunov just kind of won a match and they were like, oh, yeah, you won this match. Now you're going to be facing Carmelo Hayes, the NXT title at Great American Bash. It wasn't really ever specified. It was like a number one contender match or anything like that. I think it was who his opponent was. I'm not mistaken, but I whatever. Yeah, so it was kind of like a cold feud. And then kind of coming in here tonight, you know, they were supposed to be on the same page. I had a feeling going into this match, into the opening match tonight, that we were going to see some sort of a screwy finish that would cause either Ilya to lose the match because of something that Mello did, or vice versa. And there was a small possibility maybe Trick would somehow lose the match for them or whatever. But I thought that was probably the way it was going to go. And I had a feeling it was going to be Trick costing Ilya the match because Ilya had already cost Trick a match. So I figured, you know, that's kind of standard WWE booking. That's what I was expecting going into this. But I liked the way they got out of it here. You know, they, in at the end of the match, Ilya Dragunov was just trying his damnedest to get to put Joe Gacy away. Couldn't quite get the job done. Mello tagged in and put Joe Gacy away within a matter of seconds. I think maybe like 30 seconds or something like that. So that was a cool way for them to end the match. And then they get into all the stuff with Trick Williams. Ilya's finish not hitting intended targets and things like that. It was a great way to add some heat to this feud that I was looking forward to this match, right? Because, I mean, it's going to be Trick Williams, really, Dragunov. I mean, Christ, that's just going to be off the charts because of the technical wrestling ability that is going to be between those ropes. But give me, the story behind it was really lacking. I feel like tonight they did a great job one night weaving the storyline all the way through from the beginning of the show, well, almost the beginning of the show, to the end of the show, to try and get us to care a little bit more about the story, get us a little bit more invested in the story, and make it look like Ilya has a little bit of a chance to maybe come away from this match as NXT champion. I doubt it. I really don't think Mello is going to lose this early into his reign, but if he did, I wouldn't be super upset about it. Ilya as champion would be pretty sweet. That'd be an awesome entrance, just saying. My money is going to be on Mello. Trick potentially helping him retain at a Great American Bash.
Our main event match, which didn't go on last because it was the Trick stuff, was Lyra Valkyria versus Rhea Ripley. This went 10:08. It was by far the match of the night. Rhea Ripley wins with Riptide. I think Lyra Valkyria just gained so much from this.
Rhea's
done a lot for this division and a lot for Lyra specifically. And Lyra's somebody I liked a lot when she was in the dying days of NXT UK as Aoife Valkyrie, which I still think is a much, much better name than Lyra Valkyria, but whatever. I'm still getting used to it, and I'm not sure if that day will come. Some of them just, they never sound right to me, no matter how many times I hear it. And it's always the ones that are too close to the last one. Those are the ones to get that are really tough to get used to. Actually, Rip Fowler and Jagger Reed are tough to get used to, too.
Those two and Butch will always be Pete Dunne in my mind.
Yeah, Butch is a good name for that character. So I've gotten to the point where I can deal with it.
I can deal with it, but I look at him and my brain still goes Pete Dunne.
Yeah, me too.
You know, yeah.
And I kind of have to remind myself that. But yep. But yes, Lyra, wish it was Aoife. But
yep.
But I can't do anything about it, folks. And afterwards, Ripley gets in her face and says, "Prove me right and defeat JC Jane." And Valkyria steals her confidence and says, "I will." And she will, because JC's still pretty rough in the ring, so there's no reason to put her over somebody like Lyra. What an awesome thing this did for her. This was the second NXT chant of the night, the first one that deserved it, and then they also did a "This is awesome" chant here too. So good stuff here in the main event. I can't say enough about the match, but Rhea's been up there facing really, really top-level competition. Of course she's going to come down and casually blow everybody out of the water with what she's able to put together, Nate.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There was no question in my mind Rhea wouldn't be walking away victorious here one way or another. The only way that she wouldn't, it would be some sort of a screwy finish or something like that. Excuse me one sec. But that obviously wasn't the way they went here tonight. Still, that said, Lyra Valkyria, I put in the hits and misses that she almost came across as somewhat of an equal in the match. Rhea still got more offense in, and she obviously won, but Lyra got quite a bit of offense in this match, more than I kind of anticipated that she would. I had a feeling that we were going to see like that almost like sign of respect type of deal where she was going to say, you know, prove me wrong, to, you know, because that's been the story. She's been wanting to prove to the best in the business right now, Rhea Ripley, that she can go out there and defeat JC Jane. So I had a feeling that, you know, we might see something like that towards the end. Maybe not exactly how we saw it, but, you know, that there might be something like that. But what I didn't expect was for her to, for Lyra Valkyrie to get as much offense in, as she did against the WWE Women's World Heavyweight Champion. There's a lot of W's in that title. And then, you know, and Rhea is also one of the most, if not, I mean, she's probably not the most popular in the company right now, but she's one of the most popular, one of the hottest acts in the company right now. So for her to come down here and have a match on an undercard show, a developmental show with Lyra Valkyria, and to put her over as strongly as she did, even in defeat, even though Lyra still lost, she put her over really strong here. I really think that either Rhea was just super generous tonight and gave some to Lyra, or, which I don't think is necessarily the case, could be, but I don't think so. I think that they see something in Valkyria, and they're using Rhea as a way to give her a rub to make her seem more credible. Because Lyra versus Tiffany Stratton, for example, at Battleground, like, I knew it was going to be a good match, but, and maybe it was because it was Stratton's first title defense or something like that, I don't know, but I wasn't super excited about the match. Even sitting there, you know, 12 rows away, I wasn't super excited about the match. Lyra has felt like she's almost been missing something for me. And I feel like this might be it. This edge that she is supposedly gotten tonight after Rhea said, you know, Rhea grabbed her by the face and was just prove me right. I'm really hoping that we kind of see like a new fire under Lyra and almost like a rebirth of the character, because it's not a bad character, but it's missing something, at least for me, and I can't quite put my finger on what, but it's missing something for me to make it resonate with me as a credible long-term gimmick, if that makes sense.
It does, and I think what's missing is a connection to reality. Like, I can make it work in more of a high concept sense, in like, if she was an 80s act, she could have walked out there and been fine because it was larger than life. But what's missing is something to ground it into reality. Why did she go with the Valkyrie branding? Like, what made her feel, I don't know. They've given us little bits of her, but
especially when we have Sarah Logan, and I can't think of what Sarah Logan's new name is. Yeah. Valhalla, thank you. Yep. Especially we you have such a similar character. It's weird.
Yeah, it's kind of taken from a similar bucket. So it's it might need some more polish there. I don't know what that is. Since we are on the topic of Rhea, let's stay there. We open the show with Dominik and Rhea. A fun way to start. Booze raining down on the show. And we recapped what happened last week with Dom becoming champion. She proudly proclaimed him the new champion to booze. And Wesley came out and he wanted to shut everybody up. He was so sick of watching. He was sick of the fact that it ended this way and that of all people, it was Dominik. And then, of course, Mustafa Ali comes out and tries momentarily, but cannot hold back his frustration with Wesley, and he gets real, real insulting toward him, and it breaks down, and it, of course, is becoming the triple threat that I said last week. It was inevitable. It couldn't just be Ali and Mysterio. But I liked Ali's reasoning here. I like that he still gets his shot, but he wanted to beat Wesley, and now he doesn't get to beat Wesley. He's just beating Dominik Mysterio. After a short reign, when Dominik won that championship, I said, it doesn't matter because he'll just drop it at the Bash. And now that the Bash is upon us and this is happening, I'm not so sure. Like, I last night I was on the Raw post show, and a caller asked, so what do you think that Dom can do with this? Do you think he can raise this to, like, I'm thinking in terms of the European title, could this be something on that level? And I don't know, maybe it could. Maybe they could have Dom parade around with it there. And I talked myself into this storyline where the guys in NXT are pissed off because somebody's holding their championship hostage. And of all people, it is Dominic. So it's just driving them crazy that they cannot reclaim the championship. So maybe they're going up to Raw, having their cup of coffee on Raw, and having a match to try to win it back. And Dom doesn't drop the title to them by hook or by crook. I talked myself into the idea that Dom could win this. We are going to have a question on email that asks, name a foregone conclusion for the Bash and a surprise. This one is, I'm going to pick this as a potential surprise. I think people are expecting it to be grounded back in NXT, to be back around the waist of Wesley. But I got Mysterio winning this. Anyway, good opening segment. All three guys had something to fight for, something, a reason to fight. And all three of them reason to be mad at each other. So, Nate, on the opening segment.
Yeah, this is something we were talking about, you know, last week as well. You know, triple threat, potentially even a fatal four-way if you add Tyler Bate into the mix for the North American title. And I know, you know, again, last week I had said that there was a possibility that Mysterio may actually win, retain the title at the Bash and kind of maybe drop it after the fact or something like that. Kind of, and my reasoning for that was, It's a fun idea. It's a fun idea to have Dom run around, parade around like he won this title, which he didn't. Judgment Day won the title, as we kept saying last week. Judgment Day won this title for him. But he's running around with it like, you know, just this little chicken shit heel. Like, and it's fantastic. It's drawing a lot of heat. I mean, they're putting him front and center on in the main event of every single show. He's been in the main event of the last four shows. He wasn't in the main event tonight, but he appeared in the main event tonight. So if you count that, I mean, he was in the main event for last week's NXT, for last week's Raw, last week's SmackDown, and now he's showing up in the main event here tonight. He was probably in main event segments, you know, before that consecutively, maybe not, you know, three different shows, but still. So, considering he's got that much TV time, that much, the spotlight is on him that brightly, why not give him the NXT North American title? Everybody's going to see that. Why is he, what's the NXT North American title, asks the casual fan. Oh, NXT, a third brand. That's cool. That's where all these new guys start. Sweet. Let's check that out. You know, so I feel like it's a way to get some more eyeballs on the product, but it's also just, I don't know. It's fun. It's a fun story. Like, it. Why not? You've got it. You've got this act that's so hot right now. Mugatu. Sorry, my brain just went there. He's so hot right now. Why not put him on as many shows as possible? Draw as much for it. You know, it's not a secret that they're not happy with NXT's ratings. So, you know, I think that's why they've been putting main event talent on NXT for the last handful of months anyway. Seth Rollins was a certified ratings draw, so why wouldn't the Judgment Day be? I haven't actually looked at the ratings numbers for Judgment Day compared to Seth Rollins. That was the last time I actually looked
They've
at it.
They've been strong. Last week was the second best after the Seth Rollins.
Okay. And that doesn't surprise me. That does not surprise me whatsoever. So it makes sense. Like, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with taking main roster talent, weaving it in and out of NXT, especially if they're going to go up to the main roster. You know, these storylines are going to weave into the main roster, you know, week to week. It yes, it's kind of weird because, like, we're so used to developmental being its own thing, but why not have the main roster talent filter in through NXT, share that knowledge with the rest of the people, right? That way they're not just learning from the coaches and the people that work down at the Performance Center, but now they're learning from the alumni of the Performance Center or the people that, you know, came up through other means or what, you know, what have you. I think it's a great way to do it. They're going to get more real-world exposure that way, especially where the developmental talent, they're not touring the way that they used to before COVID. So I think it's a win-win overall for everybody.
All right. I did talk about the other time that the crowd chanted NXT, and I thought it was odd. That was during Dana Brooke versus Cora Jade. This was fine. It was the best match that I think could happen, given that it's match.
Yep.
Dana Brooke. Yeah. So, and they exploded into an NXT chant after Dana just hit Cora a bunch of times with a kendo stick. I'm like, that's not hard or impressive. Like, it's just...
But it's violent.
Right. I get that. It's just, of all the times to chant, like, for the brand... Them slumming it with garbage wrestling was just such a lame time for that to happen. At any rate, a pretty decent match, all things considered. But they had the babyface win by having the other babyface, who was just out there as a friend, distract the heel. Why? Why'd they do that? Like, the babyface doesn't gain a lot. Dana Brooke has got a pretty interesting relationship with the fans as a babyface, as it is. Like, she doesn't get cheered very much. The fans are not about her. So she could use the boost, and she wins essentially by cheating. And so the fans who are not cheering her already, they're booing her already, feel very vindicated, I would think, by the fact that she cheated to win, and I don't want – oh, boy, I really like Kalani Jordan, and I do not want her to be dragged down by the anchor that is Dana Brooke. But at any rate, a pretty decent mid-show main event, 7 minutes and 42 seconds, only 36:10 of wrestling on this show, again, resulting in a show that really did have a lot going on and forwarded a lot of stories, Nate.
Yeah, so Dana Brooke, Kalani Jordan, and Cora Jade. I like you were just saying, I'm a big fan right now of Kalani Jordan. We haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of her, but what we have seen, I've been impressed by. And you know, last few weeks I've been talking about why not put her with Dana Brooke. They've got the gymnastics background. Give her as much of a rub as Dana Brooke can give her. After watching tonight, and it wasn't like you said, it wasn't a bad match, but it's still a Dana Brooke match. And I'm just like, I feel like Kalani Jordan's almost a better in-ring performer than Dana Brooke. And she might be. I don't know. I'd have to watch them side by side. But I like Dana Brooke. I want her to succeed. I want her to be, you know, but she hasn't shown a whole heck of a lot of improvement from her time in NXT, really. She definitely has improved, but there's still... I don't know. There's just, she's not as crisp and clean as she could be.
I'm watching her original run in NXT 8 years back right now. She's only like 3 months into her run.
Yep.
And as bad as she is now, I will say she's definitely better than she was then.
Oh yeah. I would hope so. I would hope so.
Yeah. Her timing on many occasions, her timing was genuinely comical. I can't put it any other way.
I remember that. I was watching back then, and I remember there were a few times my buddy Josh, who was on the show a few weeks ago with me, and I just like laughing. Like the fact that Dana Brooke was back on the show when he was on when he was watching with me a few weeks ago was like hilarious to him because he was like, "Wow, she's that bad. She had to go back down to NXT," and like you know, he did not realizing that they were like bringing people back down there. He just thought it was hilarious. But anyway. I don't want to see Kalani Jordan get brought down by anything, you know, Dana Brooke and any of that negativity, but I think largely the, you know, I think majority of fans are probably going to see it as a net positive, her, the two of them together. Once they break away, and I feel like I have a feeling Kalani Jordan might wind up. I don't know if she's going to wind up turning heel against Dana Brooke or vice versa. But I almost feel like it might be a Cora Jade type scenario. I don't know why, but I kind of feel like it might be, which is maybe why they have her up against Cora Jade, you know, and like they wind up, you know, she turns on Dana Brooke or something like that. And kind of like a little foreshadowing or something, but it is what it is. I've already talked about this longer than I expected to anyway. I really like Kalani Jordan. This match itself was fine. I think it was probably a little longer than it needed to be. Yeah, there we go.
All right. Let's go to Tony D and Stax versus Bronco Nima and Lucian Price. Didn't expect these guys to be on the losing side so quickly, the way they're being booked. But it is NXT, and it kind of doesn't matter. You can come in, you can have that happen, and then when it's your turn to get a push, it doesn't matter what you did before. That's kind of the NXT way in the past. And if they treat it as such, then these guys will be fine. They don't have to fret about the fact that these guys weren't pushed seriously earlier. But they got their segment early on in the show with Tony D and Stax to set this match up. This match 1 second shy of 5 minutes. And Lucian Price is pretty good. And Bronco Nima's got some good raw power stuff. So I'm digging what's here. Tony D and Stax are, I don't know. They've gotten to the point where they're pretty decent. But I still think of them as kind of a joke. Just sort of what their whole... I'm never going to take a wrestling mafia seriously. I think it's very silly. And that's just kind of the way that I feel about them. So it's a bummer that Nima and Price are doing this job. On the other hand, everybody came away from this recognizing how good these guys can be, and their time will come. And of course, Tony D and Stax are working toward a championship match against Gallus that, I don't know, it seems like this story is all about D and Stax and what they've got going on. Gallus are just kind of there. They're the champions, but they're just kind of there. And they didn't even show up. They didn't come out. It was just a video package thing. It's been good promotion for Great American Bash, but the promotion for this particular match is a little odd, Nate.
It is. Matter of fact, before Gallus was even like shown on the Titantron, like I almost kind of, actually maybe it was a little bit before that. I think whenever they mentioned the fact that they were on commentary after the win, they mentioned on commentary that they'd be fighting Gallus at the Great American Bash with titles. I was like, oh yeah, that's a thing. Because it didn't really dawn on me before that. It really seems like what's going on between Stax and Tony D'Angelo is the main story here. I still feel like Stax might be doing something under bossy, little shady. Kind of two timing Tony D'Angelo. I don't know, but it feels that way. The whole thing with a couple weeks ago where Stax revealed that the whole thing with which coffee was it? Joe Coffee. The whole thing with Joe Coffee was, you know, all staged, and you know, it was a setup between him and D'Angelo the whole time. That was cool, but like, I don't know, it just felt a little flat. I feel like there's still one more swerve in there somewhere, and I still think that we're going to see that turn soon. Now, whether that is before, I don't think they're going to win the titles off of Gallus, but I'm almost wondering if that's going to be the catalyst for it. You know, let's say, you know, D'Angelo's the one to lose the match. Stax is like, what, I just got you out of jail. I did all this shit for you. We get this match, and now you lose. What are you doing for me, the underboss? You're the Don. Get the fuck out of here. Get, you know, get the F out of here. I went into Italian mode. I'm sorry, guys. So I could see that. I could see something like that happening. I'm, like you said, great promotion and stuff for Great American Bash so far. But yeah, this one was a little bit weird. Looking forward to the match, mostly because I get to see Gallus kill people. You know, it's I think what I'm really looking forward to the most with D'Angelo and Stax is for Stax to split off and do his own thing.
You can call us 515-605-9345. You can email us pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I'm going to do one of the emails because we do have three. This is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was a fun episode with a good mix of main roster and NXT talent. As we head into the Great American Bash, I'd love to hear one foregone outcome and one surprise outcome from the PLE from each of you. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin B. Catani, PhD. I've already announced my surprise. I think I think there are a lot of good reasons for Dominic to walk out with that championship. I do. I think they outweigh the reasons to have it grounded back in the company. It could be funny to see the same exact reaction in front of NXT fans as happened the first time. That would be very amusing to me. As far as foregone, I think there are a couple. But the one that feels most foregone to me is still the main event. I thought they did a lot to put real doubt on this. But I guess with the company in a place where they're just not doing short title reigns very often anymore, I find it hard to believe that Carmelo loses this anytime soon, Nate.
The only way Melo loses this anytime soon is that they want him up on the main roster. Like, you know, Triple H and everybody, they saw how great he did on the main roster when, you know, he was working with Seth, and they're like, yep, we want him. Let's get him up here. Let's go. So I could, if that was the case, now granted, I'd see that more so if it was Vince still kind of doing things, running things. Like, I could, Triple H probably wouldn't want to do that to Sean. But I could still see that happening. NXT is just a small cog in the greater wheel. So, you know, they'd probably rather hurt NXT a little bit to grow the larger product. Other than that, though, I think it is a foregone conclusion. Carmelo Hayes is going to retain the title. That is going to be my foregone conclusions. That's going to be my foregone conclusion. I have two surprises that we haven't talked about, and I can't decide which one, so I'm going to talk about both of them. First one is my less favorite surprise. It's Roxanne Perez turning heel against, or a double turn. Blair Davenport somehow turning face, Roxanne Perez turning heel. Because I feel like Roxanne was one that attacked Davenport tonight, and in that slight recreation of Booker T and Stone Cold Steve Austin in the supermarket way back in the day. And, you know, I kind of feel like it was fitting for Roxanne Perez to do something in Booker T's wheelhouse and kind of memory of Booker T there. So, that was cool. That's kind of like a surprise. I don't think that's going to wind up happening, a double turn anyway, but, you know, maybe, or at least Perez going turning heel. The other surprise, though, and this is the one that I really hope happens, but I can't see it happen, but I would absolutely mark out, probably jump out of my seat if it did happen, is if Thea Hale makes Tiffany Stratton tap out and becomes the new NXT Women's Champion.
Say that so badly, but I don't see it enough. But the fact that they're going to a second match, I mean, maybe they could.
Right, right. I feel like there's a reason they're going to that second match. There's a reason because Thea Hale's an undercard talent, right? So you see undercard talent get beat all the time by champions and never get a rematch, but why Thea Hale?
I am going to be on the NXT media call on Thursday afternoon talking to Shawn Michaels. And if I can get my question early enough, hopefully I will be able to ask him about Thea Hale as I want to. But I've got to prepare some backup material because I'm probably not going to be the only person who wants to gush about Thea Hale. Okay. Since we're there, let's talk about that Chase U segment. They fired up Thea Hale. This was the kind of segment that in the 80s and 90s I would have said, oh, she's winning. That's what this is for. They wouldn't do this. They wouldn't put the effort into this if she wasn't winning. But now they do these things even when the person isn't going over, and they see the benefit in doing that and getting people hyped up for the match, but also just endearing them more to a certain talent. But even with the smaller NXT-sized budget that they give these things, I thought this was a lot of fun. I also liked how they worked a little bit of reality into this with Andre Chase talking about how Thea Hale was training at age 16, and before she got her driver's license, her parents had to drop her off to have wrestling matches on the independent scene, Nate.
So, admittedly, in the middle of this segment, I was cleaning up a mess. My dog got into the trash, and I was cleaning up some trash. Or no, I said match. I meant segment. I don't know why I said match, segment. So I heard from my TV, but I did not see a lot of the visuals and things on the screen. But from what I heard, I loved it. You know, like you said, from what they were talking about here and just the hype for Thea Hale, you know, that's also kind of part of the reason why I kind of went with that as my surprise. You know, it's almost like they're building her up to win. And it would be, I mean, what a story that would be too. You know, I mean, all of a sudden you have this 19-year-old, I think she's 19, this 19-year-old, you know, fresh out of high school, she, you know, out of high school straight to NXT, and now all of a sudden she's got this one move in her arsenal, she's got that Kimura lock, and it is deadly, and now all of a sudden she gets the visual win, she, you know, does, and still loses that match, now she gets her rematch, and she's able to do it again, overcome the odds, beat the odds, and that's a great story right there. But is that a good enough story to tell to dethrone Tiffany Stratton, who I feel like is just starting to get the kind of wind in her sails? And they've been, I guess the wind's been in her sails for a few months at this point as champion, but she's now, you know, she's kind of got that under her belt, and I feel like it would almost be a disservice to Stratton for her to lose the title at this point. Now, granted, Thea Hale wins. Tiffany Stratton throws a massive temper tantrum, and she's looking for a rematch and all this stuff. And then maybe they go to a third match, and, you know, Stratton wins it back or something. I don't like that. I don't like hot-shotting of the titles or anything, especially the NXT Women's title, which isn't necessarily as prestigious as it once was, but I still think of it that way in my dome piece. So, you know, there's a few different ways they could get out of that. But yeah, overall, I dug the segment, what I heard of it anyway. Chase University, I've said it, you know, week after week at this point, but Chase U is one of my favorite things on NXT at this point.
I also think that Thea's given a lot to Tiffany here in terms of allowing her to be a heel. Stratton does a good job as a heel, but there's always going to be just a lame segment of the audience that's like, her conventionally pretty blonde, yay. Just lazily cheering her for no other reason. And Thea Hale is so, so universally likable that she's like the only person they can throw and make this heel work actually pay off for Stratton, who is doing her part, but is still getting cheered because of that, but also just because of the work. I mean, this, we're kind of in a post reality thing, where she's going to get cheered just because she's doing good work, And there's just not much you can do about that other than to say to people, don't. If you like the work, boo it. That's whatever. It's hard to do when you're in the arena. I get it. Oh, well, I do go on sometimes. We had one other match. It was 54 seconds, so we're just going to call that a segment and roll it in with these other segments. Von Wagner defeating Javier Bernal, but this was just a backdrop for Von after his rare win to get attacked by Bron Breakker. So down the food chain he goes, but he does need to get a few wins to heat himself back up. So Bron Breakker will be at some point facing Von Wagner. I don't think this is one of the 47 matches for Great American Bash. I think this is going to be a TV thing. But yeah, these two guys are going to go at it. Gable Stevenson made his decision. And well, he tried to make his decision. Baron Corbin came out after the big Tiki Torch stuff and just played the same character he's been playing. whatever. And made some threats to Stevenson. And Stevenson said, you made this so much easier. And he's going to stay here, and he's going to throw Baron Corbin around with German suplexes. So they're going to go at it at the Great American Bash also. Charlie Dempsey and Drew Gulak are bemoaning the fact that everyone is soft, especially Miles Bourne, who was in the scene. Damon Kemp showed up, and I think he wants training from these two is what I took from it. Dominic Dijak, cut a promo on Eddie Thorpe. Roxanne Perez and Blair Davenport fought in a convenience store. I would go bigger than surprise. I would be absolutely stunned to the point of heart attack if these two did a double turn just because Roxy is so naturally on her side and Blair is so snotty. It would be a real, real loss if she – I don't know if she plays a good face. I know she's played one, but I didn't see the work when that was happening. I do know what she can do as a heel. And then, of course, Supernova Sessions. Always funny stuff when these four are on the screen together. The girls can do so much on the mic. Lash in Jakarta. That's a place. Jakarta Jackson as the hype person to Lash. It's not like a perfect comparison, but it's kind of the same thing going on with those two. But yeah, just those two stepping up on the mic. But this turns into an eight person after Noam Dar gets his groove back by getting a fake Heritage Cup. The real one shows up with Nathan Fraser and Dragon Lee. Dragon Lee doing most of the talking, interestingly. And then Yulisa Leon and Valentina Feroz in an eight man that I think these are always messy and hard to cover, so Bruce should be happy to learn that this is a pre-show match, as far as I can tell. But yeah, fun when these folks are sharing the screen, Nate, on any of that.
All right, so I don't have a whole lot on a lot of it. The Von Wagner versus Bernal match, well, I guess really I wanted to talk about, you know, the whole Breakker thing. Because, yeah, we were wondering what the hell's next for Breakker. So I guess now we know Von Wagner, which is weird to me because Von Wagner's still, in my mind, viewed as a heel. That they've been trying to get some sympathy on him with this whole, you know, the whole, I don't remember what the heck the name of the condition he was born with was, but, you know, bringing that to light, showing the picture and, you know, kind of, you know, all of that. Come some backstage segments and whatever, he's gotten some sympathy, but then, you know, bet you get him out in the ring and he's still, you know, this kind of the same character he's been. So I'm heel versus heel here. What are they going to do? I'm kind of curious to see how the match plays out whenever we wind up having this match. Like you said, I think it'll probably wind up being a TV type thing, probably not Great American Bash since that's already booked to the gills as it is. Stevenson, Corbin, I don't have a whole lot to say here other than it's probably a good person for Stevenson to have his first match with. I know that, you know, he wasn't necessarily up to snuff where they wanted him to be for a while. So why not? You know, we talk about it all the time. Baron Corbin, he's always going to go out there and perform. He's always going to go out there and give you a damn good match, solid match. So Give him, yeah, why not? I think it's a good move. The only thing I don't like about it is like you mentioned, Kelly, we didn't see a new Baron Corbin. We've been having these teases of Corbin, some new incarnation or something like that, leaving his past in the past, and they seem to be exactly the same. So, well, I don't know what the point of all of that was. Yeah, the last thing, I guess, you know, Supernova Sessions was hilarious. I mean, that's my type of wrestling humor. You know, like Noam Dar looking at the fake Heritage Cup, thinking it's his cup, and then just like snapping out of the coma, just like Linda McMahon, and like all of a sudden, like flipping back in the chair, grabbing the cup and all that. It's hilarious. Like, Noam Dar understands the character he's playing and the nuances there, and it's over the top. I love it. But everybody else in the stable as well, they're all doing great. I mean, Oro Mensah, he's improving on the mic. Like you said, Lash Legend, Jakar Jackson, they've got some great chemistry together, so that's great. And then Dragon Lee, Frazier, Leon Feroz, I mean, that they're all great. So I'm glad to see that Leon and Freud are getting some TV time, especially with some guys like, you know, Lee and Fraser that get some more TV time than some others. So it's that's nice to see. But yeah, other than that, there we go.
5 weeks ago, the wrestling world learned the word trigonocephaly.
Thank you.
According to my notes. So I had not remembered it, and you had not remembered it, so frankly, I'm massively disappointed in both of us. We got this email from Jared Buhager. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. With the recent mix of main roster talent on NXT like Seth, Judgment Day, etc., what do you think the right balance is? Also, with Great American Bash and SummerSlam being back-to-back weeks, allowing for feuds to culminate, do we see any call-ups on the Raw and SmackDown following SummerSlam? If so, who gets the call-ups? As always, love the show and go VIP. Oh, if you could bet on call-ups, JB, I would be the brokest man in the world. It just seems like I can always see when they're going to be happening, and they don't. They hold them back. They realize they need somebody to anchor NXT, so that person that I said is ready is instead held down there because they want them to anchor the division, like Carmelo Hayes. Everybody knows this guy is ready for the big time right now. And he's not there because somebody's got to be the star of NXT and somebody's got to draw for NXT. And he's that guy. He is him. So that is really, really hard to say. The cheap answer for JB here is to say, I'll tell you who's going to get called after Great American Bash, because whoever loses is more likely to be called up in those championship matches anyway. Whoever doesn't walk out of there with a championship has a way, way bigger chance of being called up. But they've called up champions too and then just done tournaments. They try not to do that to the bookers in NXT. They try to talk to them now. Early on, it was kind of messy where they'd have champions and the champions kept getting called up, like Seth, like Paige, and these things were happening. And Asuka was less a surprise. She was one where they just were like, they didn't want to stop having her undefeated.
Yeah.
They didn't want to break that. Right. So that's why they did that one. In the real early days, yeah, they did that a bunch. So kind of breaking up the lineage a little bit there. As far as what's the right balance, I think the balance is pretty good right now. I think they've found an amount where it feels like I'm watching a developmental show, but I'm getting the star power that comes with even just a couple of acts from the main roster. And a couple of these acts that are on the show, like Dana Brooke, like Baron Corbin, they aren't overwhelming the show with their presences. They save that for bigger stars, bigger acts like Judgment Day and like Seth. So I really like what they're doing, Nate.
Yeah, same here. I think, like you said, I think the balance is actually pretty good right now. It's not like we're seeing a whole lot of main roster stars coming down to NXT, but, you know, what we are seeing, I feel like, they're being effectively utilized, with maybe the exception of Dana Brooke, but whatever, she's still being utilized. So we'll give her that. Judgment Day. I mean, like I said earlier tonight, the hottest thing in the WWE right now, they're on Raw, they're on SmackDown, put them on NXT. Why not? I think it is a good mix. It's, and I don't know, I guess I'm kind of, what I was about to say is just rehashing a bunch of things that I said earlier tonight, but, you know, I think this all works. I think it's a net positive for everybody, for the fans, for the developmental talent, for the main roster talent. It's, you know, it all works. I think the main roster talent also, they have fun coming down to NXT. It's not quite as structured and things as the main roster. It's still structured and all that, but it's, you know, it's a much smaller production than a Raw or SmackDown. So I think they a lot of times they just enjoy coming down to NXT and all of that. So like I said, I think it's a net positive for everybody. In terms of call-ups, I'm kind of almost at a point where I'm like, I almost don't want to answer that question anymore, because it's always a stab in the dark. We don't know. I mean, like I said earlier, Ilya Dragunov, if he winds up becoming NXT champion in this match, in this title match at Great American Bash, Carmella's going up. Almost no doubt in my mind. Then again, Bron Breakker's still here, and I kept saying that once he lost the title, he was going up. Cameron Grimes, how long did he stay? How long did Shayna Baszler stay? Those are all ones that we kept saying they were going to go up forever and ever and ever, and eventually they did, but it took a long time. I think that's probably as much as I'm going to say on that.
I got two cats fighting here. I'm about to start a This Is Awesome chant here right in the middle of this battle. I got a new kitten. I mean, real new. She's 3 months old. And she's a spaz, folks. She's ridiculous. She is so much different from our other two cats and really, really wants to ingratiate herself to the two older cats who are being real right buttholes to her. So she's trying to get in with them. And they just... The one that's a real curmudgeon has finally stopped hissing at her, but she still doesn't want to be, like, messed with. And so I was just seeing a whole lot of a tiny cat and a large cat bopping each other on the head right now. And, Nate, it was great stuff. I'm gonna film these two idiots when they're not expecting it. But they were getting very loud, so my daughter ran downstairs and she is currently holding the infant cat, who is her cat, incidentally. And is trying to calm her because she's a spaz, folks. She's me in cat form. All right, let's go to this email from Brian Alston. This is an updated version of last week's email. Kelly and Nate, regarding reading Doc Bruce's July 18th recap, Ivy Nile, my glasses are not cutting it right now, removed the Diamond Mine flag. Diamond Mine started off hot with a lot of promise and fizzed to the end. The Wikipedia list of members with their join and left dates below. Questions: what were your initial thoughts of the Diamond Mine and their first four members? Strong, Rust, Hachiman, and Bivens. Man. Number right. 2, if Ivy Nile were to rebuild Diamond Mine, name one NXT male and one NXT female wrestler that should join. And 3, in the future, do you think that the Diamond Mine will be looked back as a good stable? Don't forget to listen to Saturday's NXT 8 years back, where Kelly and Tom Stopp will discuss the July 29th, 2015 edition. Several well-known wrestlers make their first appearances using their real names. Kelly and Tom will also answer a movie question. This week they revisit the Director's Corner and talk about Christopher Nolan. Ooh, we do, eh? Okay. Okay. Here we go. Thank you, Brian, for this list. Tyler Rust joined June 22nd of 21 and left August the 6th, which is real brief after when everybody was getting let go. Hachiman, June 22nd, 21, and left on January 5th, 22. Malcolm Bivens, same join date, left April 29th, 2022. Roddy Strong, same join date, left October 11th, 2022, Brutus and Julius Creed, August 24th, 2021 to July 4th, 2023, maybe. Ivy Nile, September 14th of 21 to July 4th of 23. Damon Kemp, May 10th of 22 to September 4th of 22. And Tatum Paxley, September 20th, 2022 to the 14th of March, 2023, I guess. So yeah, nine members. Not bad for a thing that lasted a little under 2 years, a little over 2 years, 2 years and like 2 weeks. I don't think that history will be kind to this faction. In fact, I don't know if history will remember this faction. I don't know if they'll think about some of these guys as a faction at all. By the time it was just the Creeds and Ivy that on TV, it was more just three people hanging out. It wasn't really much. They didn't say Diamond Mine all that much anymore. It was still like part of what they were wearing, but that was about it. I remember them promoting Diamond Mine just with the name of it and saying coming on this date, whatever it was. Yeah. And oh, June 22nd, 2021, apparently I'm looking right at it. And like thinking, is this a faction? Is this like a match type? Is this a place? What is this? And then it turned out to be what it was. Yeah, my initial thoughts were positive. Hachiman never really figured in on TV. Like, they didn't do much with him. Malcolm Bivens, I think, is absolutely wonderful. I think he's very funny when he wants to be. And when he needs to promote something, he's great at that. He's just so good at every aspect of what a wrestling manager is supposed to be, heel, face, and everything in between. Roddy Strong is Roddy Strong. What you see is what you get. He's not much on the mic, but he's much in the ring. So I didn't think he was the greatest of people to lead the group because he's very dull, but Malcolm Bivens was able to do the talking. Tyler Rust is one of my favorite wrestlers. Really bummed that he is that he's not out there doing it anymore. I love his he's a strong style wrestler, no nonsense kind of guy with a good swagger, and was getting pushed right up to the end. Like, his last couple matches on the show were wins. He was getting pushed when he was let go, and then they just didn't even mention him when they came back the next week. I was so angry. I'm still angry for him. He's real good, and he was doing some New Japan stuff before that. Hasn't done any New Japan stuff since, and he's just not been in a place where my eyeballs are, and I'm really bummed about that. I'm really, like, I know that it was kind of a performance art with me talking about Tyler Rust winning all the championships at once. That was just me being stupid. But he is one of my favorite wrestlers, and I think that this was a tremendous waste and one of the worst firings of all their many, many, many firings. Like, this is right near the top for me. Yeah, the Creeds, of course, I absolutely love. Ivy Nile, I wish she was a talker because what a thing she could be. Damon Kemp, I think, is just so-so, but we'll see what happens with this next thing. And Tatum Paxley, I thought, was underutilized before this group, and now she's underutilized again. So there you go. If they were to rebuild Diamond Mine, I want to say I'm strongly against that. Diamond Mine's over, and I think it was a mercy killing. But if they did it again, I would say Gable Steveson. And
it's my pick.
Oh, who on the women's side? I need a badass baby face.
So on Wrestling Night in America, we actually read this email because it was in the inbox. It came into our show last week after we finished recording. So I wound up reading this on Wrestling Night in America, and Kevin had an interesting one for this. Akita Lyons.
Ick.
Yeah, I got his reasoning. I got his reasoning, and it was kind of like, you know, because of her martial arts, whatever background, whatever, and that was kind of the whole what Diamond Mine was supposed to be. You know, people that had athletic skills outside of WWE kind of coming together and building each other up. So it made sense. I don't like it, but it made sense.
I guess, but for someone with a martial arts background, she does a real good impression of somebody who doesn't have a martial arts background.
Yeah, there's that.
Whatever. Okay, well, I think that actually is our show, because that was our last email. I got a cough coming on and have been fighting big coughing fits the last 6 or 8 times I've talked, so probably good to fizzle out here. That was NXT for July the 25th of 2023. On a show where Nate dropped an F-bomb, the most upsetting thing he said was Titantron. Titantron, Nate, when do you live? When?
I am still a product of 1997.
This guy. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk. I can't imagine for much longer. It's just so... But it's so funny. It's so, you can't watch it unless you're there. And I kind of want to watch it burn. Or SpookyMilk.games, Nate.
Yeah, what the hell is Elon doing? X.com. I don't know. Yeah, at Nate Lindberg on X.com. Because that's that now. I do the hits and misses for PW Torch, or NXT hits and misses on PWTorch.com. So check those out when I get those up shortly after NXT goes off the air. Like I said, I did Wrestling Night in America with Kevin Catani filling in for Greg Parks. So if you haven't listened to that, check it out. We did a lot of NXT talk. We talked about some build to SummerSlam. Talked about Matt Cardona showing up at a DDT show with Chelsea Green's women's tag team championship around his waist or over his shoulder. I forget, one of the two. We talked about quite a bit. And then also we forgot to talk about the fact that if you are VIP on Sunday after Great American Bash, we will be recording a VIP roundtable after show. So that out when that drops, probably on Monday.
All right, folks, with that, we will see you in a few fewer days this time. We will see you on Sunday night with a round table that will go up either that night or the next day. Immediate thoughts in the wake of what looks like a good but bloated Great American Bash. All right, folks, we'll see you in 5. Cheers.